The musical marvels Wallace and Gromit have been clearing up their crackers after this afternoon's family prom, and the orchestra for tonight's concert, the Aldborough World Orchestra, is also youthful on two counts. It's not only made up of players all under the age of 30, but has itself only been in existence for a matter of weeks. It brings together 120 players from 35 different countries under the baton of Sir Mark Elder as part of the Cultural Olympiad. And I asked some of the players about their experience of coming together in the little Suffolk town of Aldborough.
There's something about that place which is really inspiring to be perfect for this kind of project, where it gives you that kind of space to make music.
It really is special. Yeah. And also getting to go for a swim every day after rehearsal.
Yeah. Yes.
Really exciting, those of us who are brave enough to throw ourselves
I
in.
I think that was one of the draws for me, that we were going to be at a coastal little town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As well as enjoying themselves, the players have been preparing a wide-ranging repertoire for tonight's concert, culminating in Stravinsky's Rite of Spring and featuring the UK premiere of a BBC Proms commission by the young composer Charlotte Bray at the Speed of Stillness. Before the interval, we'll hear the adagio from Mahler's 10th Symphony, and to begin, reflecting the orchestra's Aldborough associations, the Sinfonia de Requiem by Benjamin Britten. I asked Mark Elder why this particular piece.
There is a connection to me between Britten and Mahler, and I thought these two 22-minute pieces would go very well together, because they both come from deep down in the psyche of the two composers. For Britten, it was a bold statement. He had to get it out of himself. His pacifism, his anti-conflict feel comes across very, very boldly in this piece, doesn't it? The massive grief of the first movement, I think, is the wonderful start to a concert.
Mark Elder. Well, the work dates from 1940, when Britten was in America, and it's an immensely powerful piece written in the wake of his father's death. There are three linked movements. Listen out for some fantastic brass playing in the second movement, Dies Irae. The third is a slow and peaceful andante. And the first movement is also slow, but more of an insisting marching lament. That applause greets the arrival of Sir Mark Elder, coming onto the platform here at the Royal Albert Hall to begin this concert with the Aldborough World Orchestra with Benjamin Britten's Sinfonia de Requiem.
Thank you.
Sir Mark Elder and the Aldbra World Orchestra opening this BBC prom with that powerful work by Benjamin Britten, the Symphonia Da Requiem, in memory of my parents, as Britten wrote in the score. And I imagine several of the players will have left their parents for the first time to take part in this musical project that over the past 10 days has seen them performing at Snake, at the Ingolstadt Festival in Germany and the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam. But I have to say, everyone I've spoken to during the day has said that they've been thrilled at the prospect of performing in this particular venue, the Royal Albert Hall. Britten Symphonia first performed in New York in 1941, but its first UK outing was here at the Proms in the summer of the following year. Mark Elder coming back to stand shoulder to shoulder with the players on the first desks before stepping forward to receive the very warm applause. A lovely audience here at the Royal Albert Hall tonight. A whole mix of ages and presumably nationalities too. Well, the orchestra has its roots in Benjamin Britten's Aldbra Festival, in particular Peter Peer's masterclasses at Snape, which began a 40-year tradition of nurturing young performers through the Britten Peer's Young Artist Scheme. Members of the orchestra from Ireland, South Africa and Australia told me about the benefits of getting to know players with such a rich mix of musical experiences and from diverse musical traditions.
There's so many different cultures, and you just hear, even still now, 3 weeks later, there's still people saying, oh, how do you say that in your language?
Yeah.
Or,
oh, yeah.
You know, sharing different music and all sorts of stuff. It's been really fun.
Yeah, I still can't get over the accents. It's yeah. Amazing.
It was great at Snape. We actually had a little Arabic music workshop that two of the string players put together for us, and that was really interesting.
The South Americans gave us a samba night.
Oh, yeah.
Taught us all how to dance, dancing, which was great. Yeah.
You've been doing Irish dancing.
Yeah, I've been teaching a French flute player how to play the tin whistle.
Clarinetist Jessica Grimes, cellist Matisha Panagoda and harpist Jacqueline Kerrod. So the Aldbra World Orchestra turned next to Mahler, who began sketching his 10th symphony in the summer of 1910, but the full score never materialised. Mahler died in 1911, having only completed drafts of the first two movements and the beginnings of a third. We're going to hear the opening adagio, the only part sanctioned by the International Mahler Society. I asked Mark Elder whether he felt this is Mahler looking back towards his 9th symphony in a musical farewell, or forward, still pushing the boundaries of where his music could go.
Undoubtedly, he looks forward. I don't think he looks back at all in this music, except perhaps on the state of his inner life, the turbulence that he's endured. His life was very intense and full of activity, and his public life was as fraught with problems as his private life. And the beauty and power I find incredibly moving in this music.
Mark Elder. Well, the adagio starts with a long, searching melody for unaccompanied violas, the viola section tonight, made up of players from Canada, Germany, Australia, Ghana, the US, Spain, Germany, Israel, and New Zealand. And here comes Mark Elder to conduct the adagio from Mahler's 10th.
Thank you.
the Adagio from Mahler's 10th Symphony. Those cheers for Mark Elder and the Aldborough World Orchestra performing here at the Proms. The players brought together in the past few weeks from four different continents. Only 20 young musicians allowed from each to ensure a truly global spread. The leader is Abigail Bushakowitz, born in Jerusalem, but she grew up in South Africa. Part of the selection process resulted in uncovering pockets centered around particular teachers, and quite a few of the string players here are taught by 82-year-old South African Jack Devet. There's a cluster of flutes from France, and the horns are mostly from the UK. Abigail, no stranger to Aldborough, she led the Britain Peers Orchestra for the first time there last year. And sharing her desk is a violinist from Jordan. And Mark Elder encouraging the principal horn player to stand, that's Hugh Sisley. And the leader. And then moving around to the front desks and now encouraging all of the woodwind to stand. And fellow members of the orchestra joining in the applause. For Mahler, the symphony had to be like the world. It must embrace everything. His music, highly appropriate then for this world orchestra. His 7th symphony is going to be performed here tomorrow night by the BBC Philharmonic under Gianandrea Nezeda. And that's together with the 2nd symphony by Oliver Nussen, who celebrated his 60th birthday earlier this month during this year's Aldborough Festival. Well, Mark Elder very busy at the Proms this year, of course. He was conducting on the opening night. He has two more Proms still to come with the Halle. Well, there's been a street fair on Exhibition Road today, and Kensington Gardens is home to several Olympic villages. In each of our live Sunday intervals, we're hearing from the historian Dr. Lucy Worsley as she scours the area around the Royal Albert Hall for interesting things to see. And today, she's very much on her home ground at Kensington Palace to look at what can only be described as a bizarre item of clothing.
We've just climbed upstairs to the big grand state apartments at Kensington Palace, which were the beating social heart of Georgian London. Everyone who had any kind of pretensions at all would have come up to these rooms to see the king, to see the queen. But they had to be properly dressed. So I'm looking at here the female court uniform, which is called the mantua. Now, think about Cinderella films and then times it by 10. The lady who wore this is where it's an immensely wide skirt. It's about 2 metres from left side to right side, and it works by being spread out over whalebone hoops worn beneath. And it's kind of like looking at a great big piece of wallpaper. And people said this at the time. These look like architectural features rather than dresses. And with your enormously wide skirt, you had to wear lace ruffles at your forearms. You would have carried a fan. And the point of the fan actually was to show off how elegant your hands and wrists were. You had to wear white feathers on your head, these long lace lappets that spilled down the back, and high-heeled shoes like the lady's wearing here, very important. You would also be tightly sucked in around the waist. And as you can imagine, it would have taken them a couple of hours to get into these outfits for court wear. And then their job basically was to stand around chatting. And because of the weight of the dress and the tightness of the stays and the height of the heels, this was really exhausting. They used to complain about it. The lady courtiers said, "Cor, you know, I need to go home to bed. My feet are absolutely killing me." And one thing the visitors always ask, inevitably, is how did the ladies go to the loo in these dresses? And the answer is a very cunning device that looks a bit like a gravy boat or a gravy jug. And they weren't yet wearing drawers or knickers underneath these dresses. And you would retire to the anteroom and you would just pop it under and nobody would know what you were doing. However, you were supposed to go to the anteroom. You didn't do this in the drawing room with all the other courtiers. And if royal permission was not forthcoming when you asked to leave, then you just had to hold on. This is the sort of very ritualized, fossilized world of the court. You had to do what you were told. An awful lot of this involved standing up for hours and hours and hours. One time we heard that one of the court ladies said, "Look, I need to go." She was not given permission. And a few minutes later, a humiliating puddle crept out from underneath her skirt. And this is the contemporary quotation. I'm not kidding. It was said that the puddle threatened the shoes of bystanders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why did the lady who wore this dress put herself through it, if you like, wearing something so uncomfortable and standing around for hours and hours? Well, she and her husband would have been at court in search of promotion and patronage and power. This is the place to be, to come and catch up on all the politics. And that's why the state apartments on what they call drawing room evenings were packed shoulder to shoulder with all of these competitive courtiers exchanging the gossip with each other. It's described as being quite unpleasant in smell. Quite a lot of sweating was going on, literally jostling for position to get near to the king and queen. Just over here, in the murky gloom of this room, we've got another shimmering silver dress jumping out of the shadows at us. This one's a bit later than the other one. The skirt's a little smaller, but you can see the silver threads sparkling out of it. And this one is very interesting and unusual because it's made out of muslin. Now, this in the 1780s was the new wonder fabric. It had been imported from India. And even, it sounds like a sort of relaxed, informal kind of a fabric to us, doesn't it? Muslin, white muslin. But it became the must-have textile for everybody at court, and they even used it for making mantuas. Now, for a dress that's really hard work to wear, very tight, very stiff, very inflexible, a muslin version was quite a welcome change, really, because it was lighter, it was fluffier. And one court lady said that the cotton muslin feels like wearing a cloud. And I guess that it did, by contrast to the stiff silk embroidered fabric of the other dress over there. And the other change here is that this dress has got a new French feature to its design, and that's that cascade of material down the back, which is called the sack back. That's not an elegant word, but it is such an elegant dress. It flows from her shoulders right down to the floor. And if you think of paintings by Watteau, for example, you'll see ladies wearing these sack back dresses. I think it is just the most elegant dress style that there's ever been.
Dr. Lucy Worsley at Kensington Palace, and she'll be back with another quirky piece of local history next Sunday. Now, I'm joined in the Radio 3 box by a man used to extraordinary costumes, the actor Samuel West. Samuel, you've been sitting in the audience for tonight's prom. What do you think of it so far?
I think it's thrilling. I've just counted 121 people on the orchestra list, which is about a half as big again as your average concert orchestra. And I think to see those forces applied to one of my favourite pieces, The Rite of Spring, in the second half, is going to be amazing.
Well, we're going to come on to that piece a little bit later, but there's another Stravinsky piece that I gather you're looking forward to later in the proms this week.
Yeah, The Firebird. Yes, written only a year after that Mahler, which is quite shocking. What an extraordinary year 1910 must have been.
What I think is really fascinating, I guess, is the energy of those pieces. You wonder what was happening at the time to
yes,
to
I think it's the last flowering or the last... I'm actually doing a piece for ITV that's set in that period just before the First World War, when British society was at its most stratified, trying to keep itself together, and also, you know, was cracking in the most interesting ways in Paris and Russia and places like that. Yeah, I think it must have been an extraordinary time to live through. And also, I heard something about The Firebird the other day. It's got the most incredible ending. And I always said to somebody, I said to a musicologist the other day, why is Stravinsky's ending so good, particularly The Firebird? And he said, oh, he wrote them first. He wrote the endings first, and then he would just continue the commission until he had to stop, and then connect that up to the ending. So the ending's always good. I think that's such a good idea.
Well, it's going to be played by the Ulster Youth Orchestra and the Ulster Orchestra together in a combined prom. That's on Saturday in the afternoon.
And you get James Galway in the first half. Amazing.
Can't be better. And then in the evening, there's also an emphasis on youth on Saturday evening. There's a piece by Nico Muley, who's a
who's about
composer.
12, isn't he? He's very annoyingly
talented. A little
talented.
Older than that, I think.
Yeah, he's wonderful. I know him because he was the Aurora Orchestra, who I've been working with recently, recorded a piece of his which went straight to number one in the classical charts. And yes, that's a new piece, so we don't know what that's going to sound like, but I'm sure it'll be thrilling.
Is that one of the draws for you about the proms, discovering pieces you didn't know before?
Yes, I've been coming to the proms since I was about seven, and I've always been very devoted to the idea of new music, because I realised quite early on that composers learned to harmonise Bach chorales when they went to music college, But they didn't write like Bach, although they could do if they wanted to. So clearly, I thought, well, okay, they're obviously into something that's new, and I don't maybe like it as much as Bach yet, but I think I should probably trust them. And I still do, I suppose.
Well, talking of Bach, Bach is appearing too this week in the Proms.
Now, the B minor Mass is a piece that I suppose I'm only in the foothills of my enjoyment of so far. It's one of those huge pieces that people speak of, like, you know, the late Beethoven quartets. And I'm not fit to touch the hem of its garment yet, but I have just bought the second of three recordings by the Collegium Vocal Ghent. And I think it's fascinating that their conductor has returned to the same piece now three times. My father's played King Lear three times, and every time he says, oh, I haven't got it right yet. And, you know, when you've made a great success of a role or a piece or a recording, you know, Glenn Gould didn't need to go back and do another Goldberg Variations. He was a star when he was 20 from having done it the first time. But I love it when people go, oh, no, it's far bigger than me.
Well, we're going to hear a snippet to hear just how big it can be. This is one of the choruses, Cum Sancto Spirito. It's performed by the Dunedin Consort and Players, directed by John Butt.
Santo Spirito in gloria Dei, Santo Spirito in gloria Dei.
Cum Sancto Spiritu from Bach's B Minor Mass. And that piece is going to be performed here at the Proms on Thursday, starting at 7:30, Harry Bickett and the English Concert, and a fine selection of soloists.
Yes, including Yestyn Davis, who I'm an enormous fan of, not just because he has one of the most beautiful countertenor voices out there, but also because he's a thoroughly nice chap. I shall certainly be tuning into that.
Samuel West, you're not just a kind of prommer or an audience member at the Proms, you take part as well.
Yes, I've done a few. I did the last night in 2002, which was very exciting and only a little bit terrifying. And I'm doing a tiny narration for a new piece in one of the chamber proms on the 18th of August called The Garden of Earthly Delights by Simon Bainbridge. Again, with Nick Collin of the Aurora Orchestra, who I've been working with a lot this summer. Yes, it's odd. I've been doing a lot of music. I did a Jonathan Harvey piece called Veldethos, and I've just worked with Graham Fitkin for the first time.
And you did some stuff at Aldbrough as well.
Yeah, I did the Britain, all the Britain Auden films, Night Mail, The Way to the Sea, The King's Stamp. I mean, stuff that's quite far down on anyone's repertoire, but no, I love it. I love working with musicians as well, because they're unarguably talented, which isn't always true of actors.
And Britain in particular, do you have a feeling for his music, an interest in
his politics and his worldview? I'm a pacifist, and so was he. I think it's a very good time to be thinking about peace and togetherness at a celebration of the Olympics, and also of youth, which gives us all energy and hope and takes away so much of our cynicism. But also because, in the credits of Night Mail, it says words by Britain. Words by Auden, music by Britain, and they don't even and starring the men of the LMS. I mean, they don't even use their first names. It's that socialist. I love it.
and Tippett too is going to feature in the Proms this week.
Yes, they're doing The Child of Our Time, beautiful oratorio for repressed people everywhere, which I think was the first time I came upon the use of Negro spiritual in classical music, and sounds like it could be a very sort of ill-fitting coat, but he does it quite beautifully. I actually discovered that piece just after I'd played Tippett in a radio play about him, just after he'd been released from prison as a conchi, and started conducting the orchestra at Morley College, which was mostly made up of unemployed silent film musicians who'd been out of work since the coming of sound in the early 30s, including the father of the person who wrote the radio play. And it just seemed like a sort of wonderful thing for somebody to do, to keep all these people in work and hope. So I've been a fan of him ever since, really.
Well, A Child of Our Time you can hear on the 1st of August, and it introduces another new ensemble of young performers, the BBC Proms Youth Choir, and we've been hearing about the prom from a couple of the members.
I'm Sophie Hill, I'm 16 years old, I live in Solihull in the West Midlands, and I'm part of the BBC Proms Youth Choir.
And I'm Yeyan Jones, and I'm 17 years old, I'm from Rose-on-Sea in North Wales.
BBC Proms Youth Choir is a new choir that's been set up this year. It's bringing together five existing youth choirs from Birmingham, the north of England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales.
I think I'm looking forward most to performing in the Albert Hall, because I've never been there personally before. I've heard about how the acoustics are in the Albert Hall and how vast it is, so I'm really excited about that.
We're singing Sir Michael Tippett's A Child of Our Time for the prom on the 1st of August. It was written during the Second World War, so the music was written with the intention of getting a point across about how wrong the war was. So the music doesn't always sound particularly jolly.
I think the favourite part for us as a choir are the spirituals in the piece. lots of the pieces quite hard to sing, the harmonies are very hard, and we were quite horrified when we saw the piece for the first time. But the more we've sung it, the more we've got into it, and the more we're enjoying it. And I think the spirituals is something we'd like to carry on with after the proms.
And you can hear the Proms Youth Choir singing A Child of Our Time by Tippett alongside works by Ives, Barber and Zimmerman on Wednesday evening at 7:30. Well, that applause is for members of the Aldborough World Orchestra just making their way back onto the stage, and a particularly powerful piece in the second half.
Oh yeah, I'm completely addicted to the Rite of Spring, especially live. I mean, it sends my pulse through the roof. It's one of the best natural highs out there. I always try and catch it at the Proms. I've seen it with a number of youth orchestras. It should never be a sort of standard piece of repertoire, it seems to me. It should always come bleeding off the page. It shouldn't be that thing you play before you go to the pub. And a youth orchestra is never old enough to have it completely under their belts. So it takes them up and squeezes them out and completely terrifies them, which is exactly the way it should be. I mean, it should sound like it was written last Thursday.
And a very theatrical piece.
Yeah, I mean, two timpanis. Even if you can't see them, you can hear them going mad. And in this case, you know, a fast orchestra working their socks off. I think it's really important that a youth orchestra is not too prim either. I saw the NYO do it in ball gowns once. Not the men. Perhaps that was a mistake. That would have been interesting, actually. That's where they went wrong. But they're wearing black tonight, and a lot of women are in trousers, which seems to me a good idea.
Yeah, pretty fitting. I really like the energy of the players, just watching them perform. They're really sitting on the edge of their seat, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. Well, I mean, this is a piece that you have to for. There are easy bits, but then you know, there that you actually can never really afford to stop counting. And there's a famous bit at the beginning of the second half where you've had 15 minutes off, and suddenly Stravinsky comes in and bashes you over the head with a 7-5 or something.
Well, Samuel West, thank you very much for joining me.
We're
certainly
pleasure.
Looking forward to that piece, and of course Charlotte Bray, whose new commission is going to open the second half.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. You know, all three new BBC commissions in the next week are by women. That would have been unheard of when I started Promi, and now it's not even unusual. It's wonderful.
It's a fantastic thing.
Yeah.
And let's hear many more in the future. Well, Samuel West, thank you very much. And
cheers.
As you can hear, the audience here at the Royal Albert Hall are making their way back to their seats or their standing places in the arena, ready for the second half of this concert given by the Aldborough World Orchestra. Conductor Mark Elder making his second appearance of the season here at the Royal Albert Hall. He's a great supporter of young musicians, performers and composers. And before the climax of tonight's concert, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, the Aldborough World Orchestra perform a world premiere, a BBC commission, as we said, from Charlotte Bray, listed in the Evening Standard's 1,000 Most Influential Londoners as an outstanding composer talent of her generation. She's created a work for the orchestra that's strongly influenced by Benjamin Britten and his home on the Suffolk coast, although the initial motif came from Literature, a poem by one of Picasso's muses, who was also a surrealist writer.
There's a poem by Dora Maar that particularly inspired this piece, and the last line of that is "the hummingbird motionless as a star." So this idea really struck me as something that I could try and transform musically. So the title of the piece, At the Speed of Stillness, is a metaphor for that, really, that something could be moving so fast but still be perceived as still. So the piece in general is very fast, but there are moments where there's a layer of stillness over very fast-moving, quiet material.
And there's something particular about Aldborough involved in the piece too.
Yeah, that's right. Another part of inspiration for the piece came from Aldborough as well. After spending a lot of time in Aldborough, part of the countryside that I've always ignored is the power pylons that chase across the countryside from Sizewell Power Station. And when I started to think about this inspiration, it really became quite powerful. And it's the endless energy and really the zinging power you get, especially when you stand close. Also, other things led into the piece. For example, the duality of the pylons that are always in sync, and in parts of the landscape they totally line up in view, which I just took very abstractly in musical terms. So you quite often have two melodic lines alongside each other.
Charlotte Bray, who's intent on capturing the the perception of permanence that underlies rapidly changing impressions, and exploring a paradoxical use of sound, giving the sensation that material is moving faster than the ear can hear, and so seems not to move at all. She likens it to the way the image of a spinning train wheel can give the impression that it's motionless. Well, Charlotte has really enjoyed the opportunity presented by this large orchestra to explore a wide range of musical textures. And she said it was great to be able to spend 2 weeks working intensely with the players. Well, here to conduct them, Mark Elder, in At the Speed of Stillness by Charlotte Bray. At the Speed of Stillness by Charlotte Bray, the world premiere given here at the Proms by the Aldborough World Orchestra under Sir Mark Elder. Sir Mark, quick to ask the flute section to stand. And those cheers are for Charlotte Bray. She studied with Mark Anthony Turnage, who commented on how easy she was to teach, simply soaking up all his suggestions. And Mark Elder greeting her with a kiss on each cheek. And Charlotte Bray shaking hands with the leader. She's written for Aldborough before. Vers de Venise was a co-commission from the Aldborough Verbier and Aix-en-Provence festivals. And her new chamber opera, Making Arrangements, is due to be premiered this week by Tête-à-Tête Opera at Riverside Studios. So quite a week for her. Looking further ahead, Charlotte says she has a new commission from the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra's Youth Orchestra. That's for 2013. But actually, she said, it's been hard to concentrate on anything other than this moment. As Samuel West pointed out, the first of three Proms commissions from female composers in this week alone at the Proms. Well, the musicians that have come together in this Aldborough World Orchestra have been very excited to work on this piece. For many of them, it's the first time they've tackled contemporary music, but they've certainly done so with relish. Charlotte appreciative of them and they of her. All the string players tapping their bows as Charlotte makes her way off the platform. Well, certainly they've learnt a lot from working with a composer and from such an eminent conductor as Mark Elder, but I wondered what he's learnt from them.
I've learnt, if they're allowed to, how far they can go in their music making. I've learnt never to be satisfied with anything other than the best. I've learnt to put the bar a bit higher almost every day, to go on demanding, to see how far they can go. And this is particularly interesting with the people who are not so experienced. Because we had time, we had some wonderful coaches for the individual sections, and I worked alongside them, and we developed the ideas about how the orchestra should sound and how they needed to work together. Before the first concert, the violin tutor said to the first violins, just go into a room together and play the difficult passages calmly and quietly together, just to remind yourselves who you are. You're a one section and you get on very well. The double bass mentor said the same thing. Just go and be in a room and just warm up together. So the double basses went into the room and played football with their rosin.
Well, clearly, whatever their nationality, the characteristics of the different sections of orchestra will out. For their final piece in tonight's Prom, the Aldborough World Orchestra turned to a savage animal of the repertoire. At least that's how leader Abigail Bushakovitz describes it, saying no matter how familiar you are with it, it's always a heart-palpitating feeling to play it. Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. It first outraged its first audience in Paris in 1913, and though the riot in the Théâtre des Champs-Élysées stemmed in part from the sound of what for many marks the beginning of modern music, Stravinsky was actually writing in the tradition of grand 19th century Russian scores. His inspiration was the full force of a Russian spring, with the earth cracking and glaciers melting, turning streams into raging torrents, combined with a pagan ritual that's bloody, primitive and elemental. Stravinsky's vision came to him in a dream. I saw in my imagination, he said, a solemn pagan rite, wise elders seated in a circle, watching a young girl dance herself to death. They're sacrificing her to propitiate the god of spring. The work is in two parts, the adoration of the earth and the sacrifice. Stravinsky wrote the work for Diaghilev's Ballet Russe, and Diaghilev encouraged him to score the work for a much larger orchestra than a ballet would normally call on. And here to conduct the Aldborough World Orchestra is Sir Mark Elder. This is Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. 1913, it incited audiences to beat their breasts, jump on their seats, and pick fights with their neighbours. Today, it's just encouraging everyone to whoop and cheer. Mark Elder conducting his Aldbra World Orchestra in Stravinsky's Tour de Force, The Rite of Spring. Mark Elder spending just a moment surveying his orchestra before encouraging them to stand. The commitment and energy of the young players, he was saying, is evidence that classical music is not dead. And at the end of the rehearsal today, he enjoined them to remember their passion for music as they've demonstrated it over the past couple of weeks, and especially tonight in that piece. Mark Elder coming back onto the platform and encouraging the principal bassoon, Tamsin Thorne, to stand. She's British. And now all the woodwind section on their feet. I notice the principal oboe is called Suzanne Thorne. And that cheer is for the percussion players. One of the players lost a stick during the end of the first part of that piece, and a timpanist calmly strolled over and picked it up and handed it back. I think it summed up the spirit of cooperation that's so evident amongst these young players. Cheers for the horns, and now for the tubas and trombones and trumpets, and all of the players on their feet. Created for the London 2012 Festival, Mark Elder has moulded this orchestra out of a group of disparate players in a matter of weeks. They auditioned by uploading a DVD of themselves playing, and it was a virtual audition process, so an innovative way of bringing a group of young players together, but certainly a successful one. He's keen to point out it's not a youth orchestra, but they're all under the age of 30, certainly open to new ways of working, new musical experiences, and beginning to make their mark in their chosen career. Well, fantastic and visceral, said one Twitter listener. I'm sure you'll agree. The stamping starting in the arena. If that performance has inspired you and you're a budding poet, Ian McMillan is hosting a Proms poetry competition. You need to write a poem inspired by any of the pieces of music in this year's season. There are categories for children and adults. The winners will have their poems performed at a Proms Plus event and then broadcast on Radio 3. And you'll be invited to come to a Proms concert here at the Royal Albert Hall. All details, including terms and conditions, are online. That's at bbc.co.uk/radio3. And with luck, you'll come to a prom as exciting as this one. But now it's time to hand you back to Jonathan Swain at Broadcasting House.
Louise, thank you very much. Louise Fry there at the Royal Albert Hall. And just to add, there's another chance to hear tonight's prom here on BBC Radio 3 again a week today, next Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Well, two more live proms tomorrow, the second of them tomorrow evening, the BBC Philharmonic under Gianandrea Noseda, celebrating Oliver Nussen's 60th birthday with his second symphony. And the second half of the concert's given over to the night and day of Mahler's 7th symphony. Noseda's Mahler 7 from the BBC Philharmonic's Manchester Mahler cycle a couple of years ago met with a very favourable reception from critics and audience alike, so the signs are pretty good for tomorrow night. That prom live from the Royal Albert Hall is here on Radio 3 from 7:30 tomorrow night. And tomorrow lunchtime brings another of our chamber proms live from Cadogan Hall. Tomorrow, the ensemble L'Arpeggiata with a celebration of the Tarantella, a Mediterranean dance born out of the myth that a venomous tarantula spider bite could only be cured by music and dancing. L'Arpeggiata tomorrow with a sequence of Baroque, traditional and improvised music on the theme of the Tarantella, including works by Falconieri, Kapsberger, Kircher and Soler. That's tomorrow lunchtime here on Radio 3 at 1 o'clock. Well, back to this evening, and our final live visit to WOMAD is in 5 minutes' time at 10:15. Until then, a piano blues or two by Copland, played by Michel Legrand. Three of the Four, Piano Blues by Aaron Copland, played there by Michel Legrand. This is BBC Radio 3. It's 10:15, and now to conclude our weekend of live broadcasts from the 2012 WOMAD Festival, let's go over to Charlton Park in Wiltshire and join Andrew McGregor.
Thanks, Jonathan. Welcome back to 30th Anniversary WOMAD. The weather report, let's get that out of the way. Not enough rain to dampen spirits or turn the dust into mud. Sunshine and clouds, now the coolest of evenings. The music report, hot, hot, hot. Just to prove the point, we'll be going over live in just a few minutes to the headline act on the open air stage. Rock legend Robert Plant with his very latest project, Where the Mississippi Meets Wolverhampton and the Gambia. That's the sensational Shapeshifters. But first, two highlights we've chosen for you. One from yesterday, London-based klezmer and Balkan band Shakoyok, who played a belter of a set on the Radio 3 stage yesterday for us. And before it, here's a highlight from earlier today, and I'm looking forward to it because it's something I missed. From Tajikistan via Israel, three generations of the Alayev family. We'll be right back.
Thank you. You are amazing. On the violin, Aviva Alayev.
Dağlar gibi dalgalar ben aşarım aşarım Dağlar gibi dalgalar ben aşarım aşarım Takamın içerisinde saray gibi yaşarım Takamın içerisinde saray gibi yaşarım Thank you. Kemençe çalamam da babam darılır bana. Ben kemençe çalamam da babam darılır bana. Bir horun havası vur da kurban olayım sana. Bir horun havası vur da kurban olayım sana. Bir horun havası vur da kurban olayım sana. Bir horun havası vur da kurban olayım sana.
Sephardic Rachenitsa from Shekoyok, who lit up the Radio 3 stage here at WOMAD yesterday. The band's name means nice one, apparently. Oh, yes, it certainly was. Thanks to Turkish singer Chidem, violinist Meg, clarinetist Susie, guitarist Matt, and the rest of the band. And before them, you heard Central Asian Jewish tradition embracing Tajikistan and Uzbekistan. The sound of the Alayev family, built around master percussionist Alo Alayev, the patriarch, now in his early 80s. And the ages of those on stage, I'm told, range between 16 and 80-something. Extraordinary. Well, still to come between now and 1 a.m, more highlights from our own Radio 3 stage, where Marianne Kennedy will be introducing what I've heard described as Denmark's Bellowhead, folk fusion from Habadakuk, performing live. Highlights, interviews and more from one of the talking points of Sunday at WOMAD, Cuba's Buena Vista Social Club, one of the biggest, warmest and most reactive audiences of the entire weekend, I think. And after the concert, Lucy Duran stopped by to say it was so incredibly moving, so you have to stick around to hear it. Very special. Live Malian guitar and singer-songwriter and musical elder statesman Babuka Traore live again tonight, plus Cajun music from the Pine Leaf Boys. But right now, let's not waste any time. We're heading straight for the open air stage, where Robert Plant is presenting his brand new, well, nearly new band, Sensational Space Shifters. I can see them on the monitors. I'm dying to hear them. Lopa Kataris, they're Lopa. There's no doubt whatsoever we are in the presence of a rock god.
Andrew, we are indeed. And Robert Plant, as you say, is the unmistakable voice of Led Zeppelin, the iconic British rock band of the 60s and 70s, widely considered to be one of the most successful, innovative and influential rock groups in history. And Plant continues to influence and innovate. And frankly, if he can turn one of his own songs, A Whole Lot of Love, into an Arab folk song, well, he is a prisoner to no one and nothing. And in front of the open-air stage tonight, it is a sea of people. It seems like all 37,000 festival-goers here this weekend are here right now to hear Robert Plant's latest project, the Sensational Space Shifters. This is an Uber group, the Robert Plant All-Stars. And I guess you could say, you know, that this, you will see nothing like it again. It's made up of Julde Camara of the duo Juju. Of course, Justin Adams is the other half of it, and he was part of Jar Wobble. John Baggett of Massive Attack and Portishead fame. Liam Skin Tyson of Cast. David Smith from Outhouse, Rahabi and Juju. And finally, Beaks bass player Billy Fuller. And the missing link, the strange sensation. Well, Plant said that he wants to bring his personality to other people's songs and kick the door open just a little bit in a Plant way. Well, I think he's kicked the door down completely tonight, because Led Zeppelin Mark III has just taken off. And here they are, Robert Plant and their Sensational Space Shifters.
Thank you. sing the same old song. Hear me call your name. Arthur! Thank you. That was that also was going back a while. It was several dogs back. Yeah, then there's one of them as well. Probably somewhere out there in the ether, far away, far away. Now what happens now? It's a mystery. I know what happens. Shh, just keep it between the two of us. And when I told her I didn't love her anymore, she cried, she cried. And when I kissed her, a kiss that only meant goodbye, oh, she cried. So hey, mama, should be a harmonica solo, really bad. And when I kissed her, said the way you move, I'm gonna make you sweat, I'm gonna make you groove. Ah, child, said the way you swing, I'm gonna make you burn, I'm gonna make you sing. Ah, child, when you walk that way, I watch your honey drip, I can't keep away. Thank you. in the city like other flaming heart. I can't get my fill. Camera Justin with Skin Tyson. And Billy Fuller and Dave Smith. Dave Smith drums, Billy Fuller bass, kicking it round and round. It's at that stage hardships pass by me. Now friendships and hardships and hardships and threes. And that's where I want to be. That's where it all comes around. Oh, my head is in the sand. Oh. Time, aren't we? I can't do that Jay and the Americans shtick anymore. And when I told her, it's not time for that yet. Three more Jules Holland midnight shows and we'll be into that. It's a song that was, I don't know who it was written by, but recorded by a guy who really turned this around with a phenomenal amount of great British players in the mid-1960s, John Mayall with the Blues Breakers back then. We're leaning a little bit on the blues because there's such a meld between the music that we picked up when we were younger and tried to get near the Wolf, Charlie Patton, Robert Johnson. It's so tough to get in there. So with the aid of Jolde and Juju and this great collision of styles, we're able to deal with